Log Talk Radio.
Yo, what it do, everybody? This is Lee from Lee and Keys Real Talk Radio. But tonight is that Friday Night Fire with my special guest co-host Tracy T. Dub. What's going on, bro?
Hey, Lee, how's it going, man? How you doing this evening?
Oh, man, I can't complain, man. I'm just hanging in there, man. You know, it's my birthday and all, so I'm looking forward to this weekend. I'm gonna chill out tonight and do this show with you. They already got me a little drink beside me because I know we're gonna have a good conversation tonight. And I'm gonna sit back and watch some basketball. Tomorrow I got my grandkids and Sunday I'm gonna have some friends over to watch the game, have some drinks, and you know, kick back and chill, man.
You got the whole thing laid out, then you set up. Happy birthday, man.
Yeah, man. Like I said, if you can come through. I'm going to go make that run to Costco tomorrow. So
I appreciate the invite.
But, yeah, man, well, let's get into it, man. Like I said, my special guest co-host Tracy tonight, last week we broke down the wild card weekend, which was, I want to say, was too wild. We kind of predicted, you know, I think our predictions went according to plan except one of yours. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But on this weekend, right, the number one seed started action. Both number two seeds made it. So should be some good games this weekend. So let's jump into it, man. Let's talk about last week's game. We'll start with Cincinnati and Las Vegas. What'd you think of that game, bro?
That game basically went exactly the way I thought. Cincinnati got a good draw because for a team for the first time in the playoffs with a lot of young guys, you need a team like Las Vegas that is not a very good team. And exactly like I said, Derek Carr is a slightly above-average quarterback. And you saw when it came down to the very end, he had a chance to take care of business, and he wasn't able to do it. Cincinnati's young and explosive. They were at home. The Raiders did exactly what I expected, so the outcome is what I expected as well.
Yeah, man. I thought the Raiders had some chances. But, man, outside of Derek Carr, it was a fumble. I think he had a fumble early in the game. But, man, their offensive line play was horrendous. Every time they would get a big play or a big run, here's the yellow flag, holding, legal man downfield, you know, legal hands to the face. It was just like their offensive line didn't come to play. And we ain't saying Cincinnati got a dominant defensive line, but, man, they just made the Raiders' offensive line look bad. Burrow looked good in his first game, first playoff game. But it's been the same way with Cincinnati all year. Great offense, respectable defense, and as long as they don't turn the ball over, they got a chance to win for Cincinnati, man.
Right.
All right. Last Saturday night, Tracy picked the Patriots to beat the Bills. I know when Tracy was watching this game, he probably was saying, what the hell was I thinking? All right, I'm going to go first on this one. Josh Allen did something that me and you talked about. He had to come out and play like a superstar last week. He couldn't come out and be passive. He had to use his legs. We asked them to establish some kind of run. We didn't care about the yards. We just want you to hand the ball off so, you know, the Patriots respect the run game. And lo and behold, the Bills did that, man. And I was shocked by how dominating they won. But Josh Allen just showed that when he's on, he's on. And, man, he looked good last week.
Well, my first thing is, why do you have to bring up that I picked them? Why couldn't you just say, you know, this is what happened in the game, what you think about it, like you did on the other one? That's all you had to say, but that's fine. I own up to it. I really thought that New England was going to come to play. I thought that Belichick would have a formula to where he would be able to do something, because they always come up with these little things that you didn't think about, and they win, and not this time. The Bills that people have been talking about ever since they lost in the championship game last year showed up in this game. And they just, like you said, they dominated the entire game, and they were the complete package. It wasn't just throw, 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 throw. They ran, and they ran effectively. And then, of course, they could play off that. That's how come he's, you know, that five touchdown passes, come on. You don't see that very often in the regular season, much less in the playoffs. So if they can continue to have that type of play, the sky's the limit. We'll see. Jones looked like a rookie. You kind of talked about him a little bit last week.
Yep.
And that's exactly what he looked like, and they caught up to him. He was able to get by in the regular season, and he could have some bad games, and they still won enough games to get in the playoffs. But it caught up to him in this one. And the Patriots just look overmatched, to be honest. It looked like they were a number – it looked like one of those NCAA games where you have the number one seed versus 16 seed, and they just get blown out. That's what this looked like. And so you just don't see that very often with Patriot teams. But you saw it in this one. I was completely off base of what I thought was going to happen.
And when I was watching it, Tracy, when Mac Jones threw that first interception in the end zone, I was like, it's over. It was like you have to at least get 3 points out of this. You know, they drove the length of the field. They had some good plays. They came out. They looked good. And then he just threw that interception, man. I mean, you're supposed to throw that ball to the pylon. You don't supposed to underthrow that ball. He underthrew it, and he allowed Michael Hyde to get there and make the play, man. And Michael Hyde made a good play. But
moving on to throw, he could do it at Alabama. He can't do that here in the NFL.
Nah, especially against those safeties for the Bills. Both of them made all-pro. Yeah, both of them made all-pro. I think Poyer was first team, and I think Michael Hyde tied with Buda Baker for second team. So, hey, it was just – we're going to talk about the Pats a little later, just as foreshadowing to one of our topics. Me and Trey's going to talk about Bill Belichick. You know, we're going to talk about him in a little later. But, Tracy, man, talk to me about Eagles and Bucks. I think this is another one that played according to the script that
me and
you talked about.
It played according to exactly what we expected. One team. This is one of those 1 versus 16 matchups that I just referenced. They had no business being in the first place. Tampa Bay coasted. And the thing about it, like you heard me say time and time again, winning football is about controlling the line of scrimmage. And when both sides of your team, on offense and defense, are better than the other teams, you can win pretty much every game you're in. And so that was the case. Their offense was much better than Philly's. The defense was much better than Philly's. And the Eagles shouldn't have been there in the first place. The Eagles were the last team to make it into the playoffs as a wild card. And it showed. It looked like they shouldn't have been there. And this is exactly what I talked about last week when I said sometimes your team is better off not making the playoffs. And Philadelphia would have been better off in my mind. Because think about this game. At one point, they were losing 31 to nothing. They had done absolutely nothing. And I think Tampa Bay just kind of like, you know what, we got this game in the bag. And they let them get a couple of little touchdowns. But all this game did is just put more doubt in people's mind as far as the Eagles are concerned, whether Jalen Hurts is really their quarterback or not. And so your success as a team begins and ends with who your quarterback is. And if you don't know who that is, then you can't tell me who your team is, and you are not going to win big like that. And so that's where they are right now. They never should have been in that game, and they played like that.
Yeah, man. I know that when I was breaking down the game last week, I said Philly is in a bad spot because the strength of their team is the running game. The strength of Tampa Bay's defense is stopping the run. Can Jalen Hurts make a few plays? He couldn't make any plays, man. And then Tracy, that interception he threw in the end zone, that was like a JV pass, dog. It's like it's like you already late on the throw. Why would you throw it? It's like you stop, set your feet. The DB already know where you're going. You're not going across your body. And I was like, man, that throw right there epitomizes him as a passer. He's either always too early or too late. And that's just Jalen Hurts. But I think the biggest thing to come out of that game, Tracy, and I know when we do our predictions, this probably play a part in it. Tampa Bay came out of there with a lot of injuries, bro. They came out of that game with a lot of significant injuries, and that might have a bearing on how they look this weekend against a Rams team that's a lot better than Philly.
Definitely.
All right, man, this is probably the best game of the weekend for me. 49ers beating Dallas. But I'm going to let you start on this one. Me and you both called it. The Niners was going to win this game. So go ahead and talk about it, bro.
They did exactly what we talked about. They ran the ball, and they had the game in control until Jimmy G threw that interception, and he kind of got Dallas back in the game. But honestly, they never really had a shot to win. I do have to admit I had a certain delight right there at the end when they thought they were going to get that last play, and then the referee couldn't get the ball set, and so there was no time, and they kept looking for one more play. And so to have them not just lose, but lose in that way gave me a certain level of satisfaction. Sorry, Cowboy fans that are out there. You should be used to hearing people talk about this, like this, about your team. It just is what it is. But, again, the Niners are the team that most teams would not want to face in the playoffs simply because they play football that always travels well. They run the ball. They play off that with the pass. And you already know about Deebo Samuel. We talked about him and the way he runs. And then their defense, they're able to rush the passer and things of that nature. Those are things you have to do to win football at any level. And they do those things. When they do them very well, they're very difficult to beat. Dallas shrunk in a big moment. They had no business losing that game. Dallas is a higher seed. Dallas is at home. Dallas has this guy that they just paid all this money at quarterback. They have this running back that they're paying all this money. They have the greatest core of wide receivers in the NFL. And they still can't win. They have the probably the rookie of the year on defense. They have good pass rushing. And they still don't win. To me, I'm very shocked that they have retained Mike McCarthy, but, hey, I guess that's what they feel like they need to be doing.
Tracy, when I was watching this game when Deebo Samuel ran that touchdown and they broke it down, man, the nuances of that play was so sweet. How they put Eli Mitchell, they started him off on the right-hand side of the formation in the backfield with Deebo. Then they moved him down to, like, the slot wide receiver position. And then they moved him in motion to take Van Der Esch out of the middle of the field. So when Deebo cut that playback, there was nobody there. I don't know whether or not they drew it up to be that pretty, to work that pretty, but, man, that play, when they drew it on the telestrator, I was like, man, that's a hell of a play right there. And it's a running play. It wasn't a pass. Normally you have to scheme up pass plays, but they schemed up a hell of a run play on that play right there. But getting back to Dallas, man, me and you called it last week. But San Francisco just was too physical for Dallas. And
right.
We ain't even talk about all the penalties that Dallas got, pre-snap penalties. Randy Gregory, what was you thinking, bro? Randy Gregory probably had his worst game as a pro. And it's like, when he tackled the offensive lineman, I would have took him out the game. would have been like, yo, just come over here and have a seat with me, man, and we'll just finish watching the rest of the game together. But we said it, man, Dallas couldn't run the ball. Dak, once again, struggled against a good team. A lot of people was blaming the umpire on that last play. But why would you call a quarterback draw with 14 seconds to go in the game with no timeouts?
I knew the game was over because you just didn't have enough time. Absolutely
no.
Right.
And actually, San Francisco did them a favor because the defender got right off of that. He got right off of it.
Nobody held him down. That's a stupid call. If you're going to run, at least run out of bounds. He runs, and he ran for a long time. He could have slid way before that if you were going to do it. But it was just not a good call at that time. and they paid the price for it. But, I mean, the game was already lost before then. That was just summation of other bad plays, like those penalties that you talked about. So, I mean,
yeah,
to blame it on that one play, as far as they're concerned, yeah, that's disingenuous. You had already lost the game anyway. That was just the last bad play of a series of bad plays that made you lose that game.
And I think maybe it was you that said, I hope it doesn't come down to McCarthy having to make a decision. And what did the game come down to? McCarthy having to make a decision, and they lost the game.
He's awful. He is an awful coach when it comes to that. And that's one of the main things you need that guy for. He has an expert on offense, his D coordinate or O coordinator. He has an expert on defense, D coordinator, and he has input on those things. But ultimately, he's like a CEO, and you need him for certain things. He's not getting those things done. So, like I say, they are – I don't know what they're going to do. You keep hearing about them maybe elevating Dan Quinn and letting him go, or elevating their old coordinator and letting Mike McCarthy go. I don't know. I just don't – I think, like, the game has passed him by at this point, and they need to have somebody else if they really are trying to win big. He's not going to get it done.
Okay, Tracy. I mean, I know we spent a lot of time on this game, but let's go big picture real quick. What did Kellen Moore do in that game to make you say he's head coach material? And what did Dan Quinn really do in that game to make you say, okay, he should be elevated over Mike McCarthy? Because most of the penalties that they got were what, on the defense? What about 50-50? So so what did either one of them do to make me say, oh, man, let me fire Mike McCarthy and elevate this guy? You know what I'm saying? Because neither one of them showed me anything that said to elevate them.
In this particular game, nothing. So the answer to that is they didn't do anything. But then the bigger picture is Dan Quinn has shown that he can get a team to the Super Bowl. They blew it when they should have won, but he's shown that he can do it. And then also, you already know he's going to get a job. So if you feel like he's a better coach than McCarthy and you know he's going to leave, well, let's swap him out. Let's just make him our coach, and then we'll let this guy go now. Same thing with Kellen Moore. Not necessarily that he did such a great job on Sunday. I think he did an awful job. But the same situation. We know this guy probably is going to get a job someplace else, and we feel strong enough about his future – it's going to be better than what Mike McCarthy's is. So let's just go ahead and make that change now. We'll retain him as our head coach. So that's why I could see them doing that. But, yeah, like you say, neither one of them did anything this game to make them make you feel like they would be they should be elevated to be the head coach over him. It was just a bad execution all the way around. All the coaches had a bad day on that team.
All right, man, let's jump into the other blowout on Sunday night. We call this one too. Pittsburgh, Kansas City. We ain't gonna spend too much time on this one. Pittsburgh, like Philly, we both said probably shouldn't have made the playoffs. Man, they just look bad on offense. I mean, T.J. Watt played a good game. The defense did as much as they could, but that offense is just bad. Bad. There's no other words. I would say awful, but they showed me absolutely nothing on Sunday. Nothing. So, hey, Kansas City did what they're supposed to do, put the beat down to them to move on to the divisional round.
That's pretty much summation of what happened. Because we already knew they were going to have a chance. And Pittsburgh looked like they were trying to do something until deep in, the middle of the second quarter, going toward deep into the second quarter after T.J. had run that touchdown back for them. And then Kansas City, they finally woke up and realized, okay, we just need to go ahead and do what we did last time we played them. Then next thing you know, they were up by a couple of touchdowns. And then the game was over at that point. And sad to see Big Ben go out that way. But, I mean, like you said, we had already called it. I think most people that weren't Steeler fans saw it the same way, that it was just going to be very one-sided. And then all you were doing was just waiting for the clocks to hit zero. You already knew what the outcome was going to be.
Yeah, man. I think Kansas City unleashed Jerick McKinnon. It was good to see Jerick McKinnon look like Jerick McKinnon looked when he was in Minnesota. I know he was hurt a lot in San Francisco, but, man, he looked good against Pittsburgh last Sunday. But, you know, man, that was just an ass-whooping, dog. It ain't really much to talk about. The Monday night game, this was a shocker to me. This was a shocker, Tracy. I thought this game would have been a lot closer than what it was. Arizona just looked like a deer in headlights, man, from the start of the game to the end of the game. That interception Kyler Murray threw, I'm sitting there like, Kyler, what are you doing, bro? Take the safety. What? Come on, bro. That's like a rookie mistake. You're not a rookie, bro. The Rams just came out and dominated that game. But the thing that stood out to me in that game was the way Stafford didn't force the ball to Cup, and he went to Higbee and OBJ because of the double coverage that was on Cup. So I think that's a danger for other teams that play the Rams now because OBJ is a factor. So I think Tampa Bay might be in trouble. And, Tracy, I need you to talk about this when you do your breakdown. Talk about Cam Akers, bro.
I don't know what's going on with the Rams. How did you think he looked in the game?
I thought he looked good, man. I thought he looked good. I thought he didn't show any signs of, like, being hurt or gimpy or nothing like that. I just want to see how they use him this week. I got to see how they use him this week. I don't think he's going to be able to run the ball as effective as he did against Arizona because Tampa Bay is good against the run. So maybe this game this week would be more of a Sony Michel game than a Cam Akers game, but we'll see.
I think he ran it pretty well. I think it's good for them that they have two different guys you can go with because I don't know what it is with these Rams running backs. And Sony Michel has been kind of injury prone anyway, even when he was with New England. But it just seems like once they decide, okay, we're going to go with this one guy here, all of a sudden he gets hurt. So they need both of these guys up and running, especially, like you said, against a good running attack like Tampa Bay has. But going back to this game for just a second, I knew the Rams were going to win, but like you said, I just didn't think it was going to be this bad. Arizona has a problem. I don't know what it is. We can say this year and kind of give them a pass it was because DeAndre Hopkins got hurt and they missed him. But remember last year they were doing really well, and then they went in the same type of tailspin they did this year where they lost like five or six games at the end of the year. Last year it cost them the playoffs. This year they squeaked in, and they almost looked like they didn't belong either. They just got blown out. They didn't play well in any facet of the game. Kyler Murray gets hurt a lot too. He goes from being really good to where it seems like he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. To being like, what on earth, like what you just said about him, what was he thinking? Why did he make that kind of play? And so he needs at this point, he's what, 3 years in, 4 years in? He needs to come with more consistency if they want to be a team that's constantly looked at as being a perennial playoff team and he wants to be one of the better quarterbacks. Otherwise, they're going to go through the same situation next year. And if it happens again, I think they're going to have to move on from Cliff Kingsbury as their head coach.
Tracy, I'm going to make a suggestion. You let me know what you think.
Go ahead.
Cliff Kingsbury needs to become the head coach and needs to get an offensive coordinator. I think the way they start the season, you can't start a season every year so hot and then you end so cold. What is going on during the course of the year that you can't maintain? Not, I ain't going to say the same level of play that you started with, but at least a remnant of that level of play. They don't even look like the same team that they were when they were 7-0. And it can't be because you lost DeAndre Hopkins. It can't be because you lost Hopkins. I understand he's a major part of your offense, but it can't be because of one guy. So
yeah, he's just one guy. And they did it, like I said, they did it last year too. So it's something that consistently happens. And what you said might be the nail on the head. Because think about what you said for a second about whether he should have somebody else be the old coordinator. All these guys want to be the head coach, and they want to continue to do what their specialty is. How many times have we seen recently when they hire coaches and they continue to have their hands on with their specialty to where they have to give it up and say, well, I can't do both. I need to go ahead and let somebody else do that. Dan Quinn did that when he was with Atlanta. He was trying to call the defensive plays. He couldn't do it. And so then he would get two or three different times he got whoever the D coordinator was. You call the plays. That's what those guys are there for. They're not just there to put a bug in your ear all the time. Let them handle the bulk of that, and you input when you need to. That's what I was referring to earlier when I made that comment about Mike McCarthy and being like a CEO. You have the overarching decision-making calls, but these guys need to handle the bulk of that work, and you just oversee it. And that could be exactly what they need. Because does he strike you as somebody that can do both of those jobs very well?
No, because he didn't do it well in college.
There you go. And if he can't do it at that level, what makes you think he can do it at the highest level? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, man. I think Cliff, I know, you know, because even McVay has an offensive coordinator.
Right.
You know, he has an offensive coordinator, even though we probably know he's designing and scheming up the offense. You know, he has a coordinator. And like you said, the coach is the guy you making the clock management, you making the timeouts. You know, that's the stuff you got to do. And I don't think Clint Kingsbury can do it all. I think he needs to hire an offensive coordinator. Maybe he needs to see how this hiring for coaches go. Maybe he probably can get either Matt Nagy, Doug Peterson. You know, maybe he can get somebody to come in and call the plays, man. I just don't think he can do both.
No, I agree. I completely agree with it.
All right, man. Ben, are we talking about coaching? We got a lot of coaching opening up at the end of the season. We got 8 teams looking for coaches. And me and Tracy just going to throw out our thoughts of who we think should fill those vacancies for the old teams. And we just going to go off who we think the best person for that job would be. Starting with Chicago, Tracy, who you got?
I think somebody like Brian Daboll or any kind of offensive coach is going to be the best guy. I say him because of what he did with Josh Allen.
Hold up, Tracy, before you say Daboll. The Giants today hired the assistant GM from Buffalo. So
I did see that.
I think Daboll is going to be the front runner for the Giants job. But go ahead.
Okay. Well, we'll take him out then. So we'll throw him with the Giants since because I did see that and I was going to remark on it. But we'll come back. We'll put a pin in that for now. So if it's not going to be him, there's going to need to be somebody, again, that is an offensive-minded guy. And so that means that it's either going to be Nathaniel Hackett, who is currently the Packers' O coordinator, or it's going to be Byron Leftwich. I'm going to roll with Nathaniel Hackett because he's already in that division, so he gets to look at the Bears twice a year. He can come in and say, oh, this is what I would do to fix Justin Fields, blah, 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 blah. And so I think he kind of already has an angle on what he needs to do as far as that goes. He's worked with Aaron Rodgers. However much effect he's had on Rodgers is irrelevant. He's the old coordinator, and they're winning, so that makes him look good. So I would not be surprised to see somebody like Nathaniel Hackett get the Bears position.
I totally agree. I think they need an offensive-minded coach to go with Justin Fields. You want to develop this young guy. You want him to be the – well, he already going to be the face of the franchise, but you need for him to become a better quarterback as far as – especially with his decision-making and getting rid of the ball and not taking hits. So I went with Doug Peterson, man. I know his stint in Philly didn't end well, but I thought he did a good job with Carson Wentz. He did a good job with Nick Foles. He got to the Super Bowl, won the Super Bowl, so he come in with that pedigree. So I'm going to say Doug Peterson, man, to Chicago.
Let me ask you something real quick about Doug Peterson. A name that I keep hearing connected with his is Matt Nagy. And supposedly if Peterson gets a job, he wants to bring in Matt Nagy as his OC. How do you think that's going to affect the Bears when the guy that they just fired could possibly come back and be their OC? Now, I don't see that happening, but that's just something that I heard. I just wonder what you thought about that.
I think if Peterson gets the Chicago job, Matt Nagy can't come with him. I mean, there's no way if I'm Matt Nagy, I'm going to be your offensive coordinator for a team I just got fired from. So, I don't think that works. So, I think if Doug Peterson gets the job, hey, Matt Nagy, we cool, but we just can't do business together with this franchise.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that. I just wonder what your thoughts were.
All right, man. I think this is kind of – we live out here in Denver, and, man, they are not happy about the name that's being thrown around. I don't talk to a lot of guys that's diehard Bronco fans. And I'm going to let you go. Tell me who you think who should be the coach of the Broncos.
Well, I'll tell you who I think they want. I think who they want to be the coach is Dan Quinn because of the things that we already talked about and that I think they just don't want to get it wrong this time. Because think about that. The last coach that they just fired had never been a head coach before. The coach they had before that had never been a head coach before. And so Denver's operating like they know more than everybody else. Well, let's strike while the iron is hot and get this talent that ain't nobody else considering. Well, there was a reason why nobody hired Vance Joseph. There was a reason why Vic Fangio had been a D coordinator or an assistant coach for all those years and had never been hired as a head coach. They found out the hard way. So I think now they just don't want to get it wrong again. Who have you been hearing that the Broncos don't want? Are you going to say Dan Quinn?
Dan Quinn.
Why they don't want him?
Man, all the guys that I know that are Bronco fans, they don't want another defensive coach, dog. They don't want another. They want an offensive coach, bro. They want a coach that's going to – because, Tracy, we live out here.
Yeah.
Denver played Justin Herbert twice, Patrick Mahomes twice, and Derek Carr twice.
Yep.
You got to be able to score points. I understand that in the old days that defense win championships, you got to do it this and do it this way. I just don't, man, people are not happy with the Dan Quinn. And I kind of agree with you. I think that's the way they're going to go. But that ain't the way I would go.
Who did they say we'd rather have instead of him?
And it's a reason why Denver Broncos want this guy as the coach. And it's the guy that you said.
I already know where this is headed, but go ahead.
It's the guy that you put in Chicago. Denver fans want Paul Hackett, man. He's the offensive coordinator
out there. Why?
Because everybody thinks Aaron Rodgers they think that Denver has a chance to land Aaron Rodgers next year. And if they hire Paul Hackett, they feel that, you know, Aaron knows him and, you know, Aaron might be more willing to come here. So Denver probably do it for that reason, but that's the wrong reason to hire a coach, especially if you have no guarantees. But once again, in this division, I would go to offensive coach, not a defensive coach, because your last two defensive coaches really haven't had success, but your last two coaches ain't really had a quarterback either. So
and
I think Denver's
the
in a tough spot. Yeah,
that's the same
Denver's
problem they're
going to
run into. Yeah, that's the same problem they're going to run into, even if they hire whoever is the most innovative offensive mind out there. If your quarterback continues to be Teddy Bridgewater, and I like Teddy, but Teddy's a 9-8 quarterback, 8-9. It's always going to be something like that. He's just a little bit less than somebody like Derek Carr. He's not going to get you a championship. I don't even need to talk about Drew Lock. He's already shown what he is. And so they're not in a position to where they can get a quarterback next, this coming draft. There's not that many good quarterbacks coming out. What they should have done is they should have drafted one last year when they had a chance. And I'm not saying Pat Surtain isn't good. He's actually very good. And
Justin
he may eventually be one of the best. Right. And they could have got him. But they even if you like Mac Jones, and he had a pretty good rookie year, but even if you like him, again, your team starts with who your quarterback is. Show me who your quarterback is, and I'll tell you what kind of success your team has or is going to have. And so no matter who they hire, if they bring the same quarterbacks again that they had this year, they're not going to win any more games next year than they did this year. Probably win less.
Yeah, man. This is a wrong division to have a bad quarterback. All right,
absolutely,
man. Real quick, Jacksonville, who you got? I think we got the same person for this job.
Oh, of course we do. This is easy. Hometown hero. Offense has got to work with Trevor Lawrence. That will be Byron Leftwich. I mean,
yep.
You got people turning down interviews for that job. I think Dan Quinn was one of the people that turned Jacksonville down. He's like, I have so many choices. I don't even have to accept all the options. And so you know he wants that job. And we'll get into this a little bit later when we talk about, I think that's something you had on tap to talk about the minorities and coaching and things of that nature. If you're a minority and you get an opportunity, you get offered a job, no matter how bad it is, you have to take it because you don't know when the next one is coming.
Yep. You can't do a Josh McDaniels. You can't accept the job and then turn it down because you will be blackballed probably forever and a day. So,
if he was a certain type of coach when he did that, he probably got fired from the team that he was with. It would have been like, look, well, you can't come back here either. We didn't already got somebody else. So, yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
That's cool. Byron Leftwich, we both got Byron Leftwich going to Jacksonville. Who you got going to Houston?
okay.
This was a tough
before
one.
I say, yeah, it was. Before I say who I put here, I'm a preluder with this. Somebody that you would never think of or somebody that's not going to be in the running for other jobs is going to get this job because this is the job that nobody wants. The only shot they have of getting a credible coach is I kind of heard rumors to where Brian Flores might come there because supposedly Deshaun Watson was going to come to Miami because Flores was there. So, of course, now if they can get Flores, maybe they'll get Deshaun Watson to say he doesn't want to leave. Okay, now all of a sudden this job looks a little more attractive. But if that's not the case, this is the worst opening in the league because of the owner, because of the GM, and some other things that have happened. So I'm going to say somebody like Kellen Moore that really has no chance to get one of these other jobs, but people keep saying he should be a head coach. Somebody like him will get this job simply because nobody else wants it, and they keep saying that he's a head coaching candidate. So and we need somebody to work with whatever that their quarterback's first name. I know Mills is the last. I think it might be David Mills.
Davis Mills.
Yeah, Davis Mills. Okay. So, yeah, they'll say, well, he can work with this guy. So, yeah, this job is awful. It's going to be somebody like him that gets it simply because, like I said, any guy that really has the ability to get a better job will not accept this one.
Man, I totally agree with you. But I got Todd Bowles, man. I got Todd Bowles going to Houston. I'm hoping that if Todd Bowles get an interview with Houston, I know he'll take it. But I'm hoping for his sake that, you know, he don't get the job because going for the Jets to Houston, he'll never get another head coaching job, man. I think Houston would probably try to hire him just in hopes of keeping Deshaun. But if what you say is true, that Brian Flores and Deshaun kind of sort of got like a relationship or a mutual thing where they want to work together, I'm hoping it's that because then I think Deshaun will come back and I think Brian Flores will probably be the best, I ain't going to say the best coach for them, but he did a good job in Miami. You know, they won. They had some slow starts, but they did win games. But I think Todd Bowles is eventually going to end up getting this job. And, man, I just hope that, you know, he had more success than he did in the Jets. But it's just a bad situation in Houston overall. So I'm kind of with you. Somebody going to take the job, but it's going to be like, damn, do I really want to take this job? So
right.
It's just a bad situation in Houston, man, especially not knowing what Deshaun's situation is. So, hey, man, moving on, man. We got the Raiders. Who you got going there?
The Raiders' job is another one of those ones that's kind of what makes it really attractive for some people is because it's in Las Vegas. But to me, they don't have any talent that makes you say, oh, if I can get there, I'll be the difference between losing in the first round and getting to the Super Bowl or whatever. So I think it's either going to be one or two guys. Is he going to be the guy that was the interim? I keep hearing Jim Harbaugh's name come up. It's going to be one of those guys. If I had the bet, I would say it's going to be the guy that they already have.
I don't know, man. Why? I mean, Versace, really?
They keep saying how much they like this dude.
Yeah. See, and that's where an organization will go wrong. Why are you hiring a coach? Because the players like the coach. You need to hire a coach that's going to push your organization to bigger and better things. Do you really think Basaccia is going to push your team to bigger and better things? Your team basically came together and overcame adversity because they probably all got together as men and said, yo, let's make this a special season. It probably wasn't because of nothing that he did or said. They did it as a group. So, man, Tracy, this is going to hurt me to say this.
What's that?
Because I kind of agree with you with Houston. But I think the Raiders is for Brian Flores, man.
You might be on to something because I kind of started looking, and we're starting to run out of spots where we can say that's where he's going.
Yeah. I kind of like Flores going to the Raiders. Because he has a quarterback, he has a solid defensive line. They just need to draft better with the skill position and the back end of the defense. And I think Flores is one of them guys that's a quote unquote player coach, and players want to play hard for him. I didn't like the firing of Mike Mayock. I thought Mayock did a good job at drafting players. You don't know what a player is going to do once they get in the league. I'm quite sure Mike Mayock didn't know Henry Ruggs was going to get a DUI, kill somebody, and be in jail. I'm quite sure he didn't know Arnett was going to be brandishing a firearm and threatening people. He didn't know that. But when you look at this, Arnett and Ruggs as players, they were good players. They was being solid players for the Raiders. So I like Flores going to the Raiders. I think that's a good fit for him, bro. I like Flores with the Raiders.
I can see that happening.
Yeah, I like Flores with the Raiders, man. I just do. I think that's a good fit. I probably like him with that black Raiders hat on, wearing that all black. I think that'll be gangster. So I like Flores with the Raiders. All right, the Giants, you know, granted they hired the assistant GM for Buffalo today. I think that's basically leaning towards them hiring Brian Daboll to probably try to mold Daniel, what's his last name?
Jones.
Yeah, Daniel Jones, probably in the mold of Josh Allen.
Right.
I was going to go with Jim Harbaugh because I just think that would have been crazy. Jim Harbaugh leaves Michigan to go to the Big Apple, and the Giants probably would have let him, quote-unquote, man, let him pick his own GM or which GM he wanted to work with. So, but I think this is headed towards Brian Daboll, and I think that's just the end-all, be-all with them right now.
Brian Daboll makes sense because of that connection, like you said, and these guys already know each other. And we're going to talk a little bit more a little bit later about how knowing people get you positions in this league. And so that makes sense. But before that happened with them hiring that GM, the guy that I had targeted going to the Giants is the guy you just picked to go to the Raiders, and that was Brian Flores. Because I had heard that apparently the owner of the Giants had reached out to Flores himself. And so when that's not something that you hear all the time, that the owner is reaching out to prospective coaches. And so, and I mean, the guy has proven that he's a winner. Look at the garbage they had in Miami. Look how successful he was. So just imagine how good his teams would be if he actually had talent all the time. And so that was who I had penciled in as the Giants guy until, like you said, they came out with this hiring. And then it only makes sense that Daboll would be the guy simply because you got that pre-existing relationship.
Yeah, man. I think what the Giants want to do now is they want to stabilize their organization. And if you look at Buffalo, Buffalo is a stable organization that you can see in the league right now. The players and the coach work together. The coach and the front office work together. And then they got a crazy fan base. So I think that's what the Giants are going for. Man, you know what? It'd be crazy for the Giants to hire Brian Flores and then maybe hire Rick Smith. If they would have hired Rick Smith as a GM, you would have had a black GM and a black coach in the Giants. I think that would have been crazy. But, yeah. All right, man, let's jump into the one job you said is probably the most attractive, man. Minnesota. Who you got going to Minnesota?
Minnesota is kind of tough because we went through so many candidates already, but I'm going to revisit them with somebody that we talked about before. You had him going to one of the other positions, but I think Minnesota is a good place for somebody like Doug Peterson because he has shown, obviously, that he can win a Super Bowl. He did that. Like you said, that things went sour in the last year in Philly, but up to that, he was doing a good job. They got to the playoffs. I think maybe every year, the 2 years in between, and they didn't make it the first year or the last year. But he is a good coach, and I think they're looking for an offensive-minded coach because generally speaking, the way things go, if you used to have a defensive coach, now you're looking for an offensive coach. And then it goes the other way. If you had an offensive coach, now your new guy has to be defensive. So since they got rid of Zimmer, who was a defense guy, now the natural inclination is, okay, well, we need to bring in an offensive guy and kind of, get the best out of Kirk Cousins for however much longer he's going to be there and utilize all this great talent we have. So I could see somebody like him going there. A dark horse would be somebody like Eric Bieniemy, who we haven't mentioned at all yet, simply because of his reputation from working with Andy Reid. And he kind of has ties with Minnesota because he used to work there a long time ago as a coach. So that's something to keep in the back of your mind as well.
Man, I'm going with a young guy, man. I think Minnesota.
Who you got?
I'm going with Kellen Moore. I think Minnesota, I think they want to be more explosive on offense because they got Green Bay in their division. And if you look at Detroit and Chicago, those teams are only going to get better, man. I like what I saw out of Detroit with Jared Goff, Amon St. Brown, DeAndre Swift, bringing in Reynolds. I like what I saw to Detroit. Green Bay probably take a step back if Aaron Rodgers leaves. I ain't going to say probably. They are going to take a step back. And I see Justin Fields, if he get the right coach, Chicago has a chance of being explosive. So Minnesota don't want to be a defensive team. I think they want to be more explosive on offense, and that's why they got rid of Zimmerman. So I like Kellen Moore probably going to Minnesota, working with Kirk Cousins, Dalvin Cook, Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen. I think he'll be a good fit with Minnesota. Although he's a first-time head coach, we'll see how it goes. But his name is hot on the block right now.
Yeah, we definitely will see. Because for every Sean McVay, you get whoever what's that dude, Adam Gase. For every
Adam
Gase. Thing, you get Adam Gase. So,
All right, man, the last job, Miami. I'll go first on this one. I think the guy that you got going to Denver goes to Miami, dog. Although I think Miami should be looking for an offensive-minded coach to go with Tua, Quinn has that Super Bowl pedigree. Although they don't win it, he got the team there. And he did turn Dallas' defense around this year. They went from a bottom defense to a top half of the league defense. I like Dan Quinn going to Miami. Although I think they need an offensive-minded coach, but I think Dan Quinn goes to Miami.
I think you're on to something, because I actually had his name down here, too. It's just like an alternate, because I had him because I had read that he has ties to the GM that they have there. So there's that natural tie-in to where, well, I know this guy, so I'll hire him. And then he actually right now is the number one guy that's in the market. So if you can get him, nothing else really needs to be said. And I know personally for me, nothing against Denver. Like you say, we live out here in the Mile High area. And so nothing against that. But if I have a choice between Denver and Miami, that's where I'm going. It's not going to be here. And so, yeah, I'm going to take that Miami job. So, yeah, I could definitely see him getting offers from both teams and choosing sunshine over snow.
All right, man. Let me see. We got about 10 minutes left. So we're going to just jump that. We're going to jump Bill Belichick. Let's talk about let's go to the next topic, Tracy. We can talk about which players we got our eye on this weekend. Which players you got your eye on, bro?
Okay, the main guys I'm looking at, number one is going to be Jimmy G because of his shoulder. Because for me, I give San Francisco a really good shot of winning that game. But if his shoulder's hurting and it's going to be super cold out there, they're not going to be able to run the ball every single down. I know they'd like to. But how his shoulder is doing is going to play very big into whether they have a chance to win that game or not. Did you just want me to talk about that game, or you want to name off a couple other guys?
No, you can. Well, I'm gonna go with this one since you got Jimmy G. This ain't a player. This is more of a unit. I'm going to be looking at Tampa Bay offensive line going against the Rams defensive line. Tampa Bay with injuries to with worse and Jensen being hurt. I think I saw somewhere today where both guys are going to try to give it a go. Worse with that ankle, man, bro. He probably with a bad ankle is probably better than his backup. Because his backup got dominated last week. So, if Wurst and Jensen are iffy, I think Tom Brady is in for a world of hurt. I think he's going to witness what Mahomes witnessed in the Super Bowl last year when Mahomes' offensive line was decimated. And I see that Rams front four coming after him all day long. And if on the Rams, you know what? I'll go through that when we get to our breakdown, when we get to our predictions. What's another player you got your eyes on, bro?
I'm going to go on the other side of the same game. The Rams in their offensive line with Andrew Whitworth already being sent. They already said he's going to be out. And so that's probably the best lineman. Yeah, he is out. And so Matthew Stafford is going to be in the same situation like you just said about Tom Brady. Tampa Bay has dudes that can get after that quarterback. And so that was going to happen anyway. And so now when you're missing perhaps your best lineman, it's going to be a long day. And so both of those teams, you made a good call when you said it for Tampa Bay. But the same thing applies to the Rams line too, because they're missing their best guy. And it's going to be a field day for guys that want to rush the quarterback. And you know that Todd Bowles likes blitzing and getting those guys in different positions to get back there.
Man, I did not know Whitworth was out, man. That's a major loss. What, he played left tackle?
I believe he is their left tackle. They're not going to be able to replace him. And you can't double team everybody.
And do you really want to bring in a tight end as an extra blocker? Because that way you kind of like negate your three wide receiver set. Or you can't play Higgins.
And that's the same thing that we're talking about on Tampa Bay side. And we'll touch on that a little bit, like you said, because of the predictions. But if they have to keep Gronk in as a blocker, Tampa Bay's in huge trouble.
Yeah. I'm going to go with this guy, Tracy. I'm going with Ryan Tannehill versus Cincy, man. Tannehill has been up and down all year. I know everybody's excited about Henry coming back. But Tannehill is going to have to better throw the ball effectively against Cincinnati because Cincinnati is going to score points. People can, you know, they can poo-poo Cincinnati playing the Raiders last week. But if you look at Cincinnati all year, except the game against Cleveland where they turned it over a lot, they done scored points all year long. And Tennessee secondary isn't the best. So I look at Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, Chase, Tyler Boyd, and C.J. Uzomah going against that secondary. If they can give Joe Burrow time, he'll pick them apart. And guess what that means? Ryan Tannehill, they're kicking the ball off to you. What you going to do? Derrick Henry is only going to get you so far in this game. Because if you let Cincinnati go up 10-zip, 14-zip, Derrick Henry becomes a non-factor.
Right.
So
yeah,
Ryan Tannehill has to be effective in the pass game in this game. Cincinnati don't have a scary defense. They got a respectable defense. So, Ryan Hill, you got A.J. Brown healthy, Julio healthy, Derrick Henry's going to come back. I like Deontay Foreman in the past game. They really don't have a tight end to really talk about, but I do like Chester Rogers, and I do like the Westbrook kid in the past game. So, I think this is a game built for Tannehill, and you ease Derrick Henry back. Because if you make it to the AFC Championship, that's the game you want Derrick Henry.
Right, that you want to be able to unleash him. Because they got the other guy that's a running back, too. And I can't call his name right now, but he's had some good games,
Deontay
too.
Foreman.
No, not him. There's another guy.
Dontrell Hilliard.
There you go. That's his name. So, yeah, like you said, pick and choose your spots with Henry and try to win without him because you've been doing it. It's not like you need him to win. And then save him, like you said, for when you really need him, when you play against either Kansas City or Buffalo, if you can get this game.
Yeah, man. I think Tannehill has to show up, and he has to be the reason they win the game, not the reason they lose the game.
He has to be. We'll see if he can do it.
All right, Tracy, man. We got to jump into our predictions, bro. Who you got, Cincinnati or Tennessee?
Tennessee, because of the running game.
Go ahead.
Oh, just because I think if they control the ball, then that means there's no Joe Burrow. You don't have to worry about that explosiveness if he's on the sideline. So if they can control the ball, run the clock, they don't have to worry about Ryan Tannehill. So you're actually killing two birds with one stone. If you can run, he doesn't have to throw, and Joe Burrow's not on the field. So I just think that they're tough-minded. Cincinnati still is a really young team. They had a good draw last week. They're not going to be able to do to Tennessee what they did to Las Vegas. So I'm rolling with the Titans on this one.
Man, I'm going Cincinnati with the upset.
I wanted to, but I just couldn't do it.
I think Joe Cool leads the Bengals to victory, man. I think Burrow, Chase, Mixon, and T. Higgins all have big games. I think Cincinnati's defense can slow down Henry and the Tennessee offense. Although I do think Tennessee defensive line should dominate Cincinnati offensive line, but I think Cincinnati offensive coordinator, he's going to find ways to get the ball out of Joe Burrow's hands fast against a Tennessee secondary that wasn't very good. I like Cincinnati pulling off the upset. All right, Tracy, who you got, San Francisco or Green Bay?
I'm going to go with Green Bay. Like I said earlier with Jimmy G having this shoulder issue, he struggles to be consistent anyway. And so I think if he has any problems, they're not going to be able to run the ball enough to win the game. I know they want to, but I just think that in the cold weather they're going to have, along with this injury, at some point I think he's going to get knocked out of the game. They're going to have to roll with Trey Lance. And I just think Green Bay just they're getting their big pass rushers back and everything. I think they'll just be too much for San Francisco.
I like Green Bay to win this game. It's going to be cold in Lambeau. I think Aaron and Devontae will do what they do against a bad San Francisco secondary. But I think this is an Aaron Jones, A.J. Dillon game. I think Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon should be able to run the ball against Kansas City defense. Although their front four is very stout, I think if they can, you know, at least establish some kind of run game, that's only going to make Aaron and Devontae and Allen Lazard more effective. And I see, like you said, I think Jimmy G going to make a couple of mistakes in this game, and Green Bay going to take advantage of those mistakes. And this game could be early with if he make those mistakes in the first half, this game could be over with by the third quarter. So I like Green Bay to take this game. Next game, Rams versus hold up. They play Sunday night, right? The early game is Buffalo, Kansas City, I think. Which one is it?
Okay.
It don't matter.
I'm not sure
what
Rams,
Tampa Bay.
But yeah. Okay, we'll roll with that one. I went back and forth on this one, especially when we started hearing about the injuries and stuff. But I just think Tampa Bay's experience that went out. The main thing that I think is going to be the difference, I kind of alluded to a few minutes ago, is going to be Gronk. I just think the Rams don't have anybody that can cover him. Because think about it. They're bringing some guy that's been retired for 2 years to play safety, Eric Weddle, because they're so desperate to have guys because they got injuries. If this is what you think you're going to be doing to try to cover perhaps the best tight end in history among others, they're not going to be able to do it. So I think Gronk is going to be the difference. I think Tampa Bay wins.
I'm going the other way. I'm going Rams. I think the injuries to the Tampa Bay, the injuries are going to finally catch up with Tampa Bay. You got the offensive line hurt. Ronald Jones is hurt. AB is cut. Your right tackle is hurt. Your center is hurt. Cyril Grayson had a poor hamstring 2 weeks ago. I think the injuries finally start piling up, and they don't get the breaks they got last year. Another thing I like is what I saw from the Rams offense. Stafford spread the ball around. He threw it to Higbee. He threw it to Odell. He threw it to the running backs. He threw it to Vance Jefferson. So everybody got to eat last week against Arizona. And I think Arizona's secondary is better than Tampa Bay's secondary. So I like the Rams in this game. And I think this is going to be a game where Odell will not star. He won't be a star in this game. But he's going to play well enough in the pass game where he can make some plays that lead the Rams to victory.
All right. We'll see. I mean, it could very easily go that way. It could.
Man, this game here was the hardest game for me to pick. Buffalo versus Kansas City. Who you got?
It's tough for sure, but I'm going to run with KC. I think they're going to win for three reasons. I think Patrick Mahomes is going to be Patrick Mahomes. We know he struggled during the season, but he put it together, and he started looking like the guy we saw last year. I think he has his confidence back. I think he has pretty much all the weapons he had last year outside of maybe somebody like Sammy Watkins. I think Jerick McKinnon, like you mentioned earlier. You say something?
Sammy Watkins. So, yeah, Sammy Watkins wasn't a weapon.
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, he came up with some big plays, though. But I agree, but I had to mention him in case somebody's listening. What about Sammy? But, yeah, he made a couple of big plays, but, I mean, he's easily replaceable with somebody like Byron Pringle. And so they got everybody they need. The game is going to be in Kansas City. And remember this, Kansas City has been – this is the fourth year in a row where they've been in this position. Because remember a few years ago when they had the Patriots beat, Brady throws an interception,
yep,
but they call a penalty. Patriots win, Patriots go to the Super Bowl and win. So they could have won to the Super Bowl 3 years in a row. As it wound up, they only went 2 years in a row. But they've been through this before. Buffalo is really good and all that. They played the perfect game last week, which in my mind means it goes the exact opposite this week. It ain't going to be perfect. They're not going to be able to run the ball as easily as they did last week. Josh Allen is going to make a mistake or two that he didn't make. And or he's going to run and he's going to fumble, because I know they like him to run, but I think he runs too much, and he's going to get hurt doing that. I just think that Kansas City just has too much of what it takes to win to say that they're not going to win this game. The Bills are good, but they still don't have the consistency. They did it last week. If they can do it again this week, we'll see. I don't think they can.
Tracy, man, I went back and forth on this one. You probably went back and forth on the Rams in Tampa Bay. I went back forth on Buffalo, Kansas City. I'm going with the upset again, bro. I'm going with Buffalo.
How come? Why?
Man, okay. This is my thinking. Buffalo is really good on both sides of the ball. They're really good on offense, really good on defense. Kansas City is really good at home in the playoffs, especially with Mahomes. But I think the Bills pull it out, man, because I just got more faith in Buffalo's defense than I do in Kansas City's defense. I think they'll find a way to slow KC down, slow down KC's offense. And while they're slowing down KC's offense, Josh Allen is going to be doing his thing against that suspect defense. And especially with them implementing the run game here lately, Josh Allen, he doesn't have to be basically the focal point of the run game. He could let Singletary do that, and he could just light up the KC secondary. And I think the defense will do just enough to harass Pat Mahomes with some timely blitzes to get Kansas City offense off the field, so that you have the strong point of Buffalo, their offense, going against the weak point of Kansas City, their defense. I like Buffalo to win this game in a close one. Everybody think this game going to be high scoring. I think it could probably get in the 30s because both teams are so explosive on offense. But I'm going to say this game probably end up in the high 20s, though. But I like Buffalo to win.
This is the only thing I'll say about what you said. In all the games that Mahomes has played in the playoffs, we've only really seen him slow down one time, and that was in the Super Bowl last year. And the reason why they were able to do it is because they have all these pass rushers that I talked about when I mentioned Tampa Bay versus the Rams. Buffalo doesn't have anybody like that. I mean, I'm not saying they can't put pressure on the quarterback, but you can't really name somebody that's like, okay, we know he's going to be in the backfield all day. It's going to have to take, you know, like you say, safety blitzes and things of that nature to generate pressure. But if a safety is running after Mahomes, who's taking his place in the back in the backfield, where Tyreek Hill or Kelsey or one of those guys is? So it's definitely a chess game. If Buffalo wins, they are going to have to do exactly what you said, and they're going to have to play a perfect game on offense again. No turnovers. It should be a good game, though, and I do like the fact that we have a couple of games that are just like, okay, it could go either way, and they both should be really good games. That's this game. And the Rams and Tampa Bay game.
I think the highest spreaded game before is like point spread is Green Bay. I want to say Buffalo and Kansas City is between 3 and 6, maybe 3. I think three was going into the week last week when the matchups was announced. It was 3.
Right.
I want to say Tampa Bay and the Rams was 3. So these games are basically, if you look at the bettors and the odds makers, these games are pretty much call-ins. Because you got the home team winning, you had them only winning by 3. Basically, the home team get 3 points because they're the home team. So
you sound like a man that bet once or twice before.
Hey, man, You know, Tracy, man, you know, we do these shows, you know, we got to educate ourselves on a little bit of this, a little bit of that. So, you know, man, I do kind of like look at the lines a little bit, although I don't gamble. I do my daily fantasy stuff. So, you know, I got 2 lineups for this weekend. So, you know, I do that. But, yeah, man, it's just that when you get to this part of the season, it should be only good teams playing.
Right, and there should be pick-ems. Yeah, there should be pick-ems. And so, so basically what you're telling me is that what you're talking about is just for educational purposes only.
Yeah, just that's it, dog. Nothing really to brag about. But look, man,
okay.
I know we kind of went over on time, but I really want to talk about this. We ain't going to spend too much time on it, but, hey, man, I want to talk about Bill Belichick, dog.
Okay.
You know, everybody talk about Bill Belichick being a genius and, you know, the greatest defensive mind the game has ever seen. You know, after they lost against the Bills, you know, I had this question in my head. I was like, is the game passing Bill Belichick by? So, you know, I was like, when we get on the show Friday, I'm going to throw that question to my man Tracy and see what he thinks. What you think, man? You think the game passing Belichick by?
No. I think that when things happen, we tend to overreact one way or another. If somebody's really good, they're the best ever. If somebody's really bad, it's time for them to quit. It's time to change and move on to somebody else. I think Bill Belichick is still a genius. I think Bill Belichick is either still the best coach or he's one of the top 2, 3, 4 coaches in the NFL. I'll tell you this right now. If Atlanta had a chance to hire him as their coach, offer him whatever he wants. Bring him in because the dude just wins. He gets coordinators. He lets his coordinators do what they're supposed to do. So I don't think the game is passed him by. Normally you hear about that. It happens with offensive guys. Like, for example, somebody like Mike McCarthy. To me, he's somebody that the game has passed by. Other people just haven't figured that out yet that work for the Cowboys. And so I just think that, you know, his team had a bad game, and he just got maybe outcoached a little bit, and they lost. But has the game passed him by? Absolutely not. He is still the best coach, if not one of the best coaches. And think about this. When he gets guys, half his work is already done. Because his success speaks for itself. They already know that he's very demanding. These guys come in there, they toe the line, and they do what they're supposed to do. And then they listen to whatever he says because he's proven that it works. This guy hasn't lost it to me. I think he still has what it takes, and he still probably will for at least another 2 or 3 years until he decides not to do it anymore.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on this. I don't think the game passed him by, but I think his attitude might have to change a little bit. The game Saturday showed me that Josh McDaniels and Belichick don't trust their young quarterback yet, and the key word is yet. And that showed in their game plan Saturday. I just think that Bill Belichick has to change his attitude towards the game. The NFL game is more offensive now. That attitude of winning with defense, I don't think that's the way the game play no more, Tracy. I think the game now of the NFL is we're going to be aggressive on offense. We're going to throw everything we can at the defense so that we can score points. And I think teams have figured out that scoring is how you win the games. The Pats need to see what they have in Jones. What do you have in the kid? The only way to find that out is by letting the kid play quarterback. Let the kid throw the ball. Let the kid run an offense that's meant to score points. Belichick, you got to get out of this conservative mind of thinking on offense. You got to become more in tune with the times that's being played with team offense nowadays. Tracy, when you look at the top teams in the NFL, let's look at probably the top 4 teams. We're going to go with Green Bay. Green Bay can score against basically any defense you throw against them. If you try to play 2 safeties high, guess what? They're going to run the ball. If you try to play man-to-man, They're going to play action you and kill you on the pass game. Tampa Bay, they was a two seed in the NFC. Tom Brady, he had the most pass attempts in the league, most completions, most touchdown passes. But one thing about Tampa Bay is I don't trust their run game, but this is a passing league nowadays. So you got the best guy doing it. So guess what that does? Put stress on your defense, which eventually puts stress on your offense. Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen. No, it was Patrick Mahomes and Tennessee. Although I think Buffalo is a better team than Tennessee. But guess what those teams can do? They can score points. You got to be able to score points in this league nowadays. And I think that attitude of defense wins games, I'm not buying that no more, Tracy. And I think Bill Belichick needs to probably get out of that frame of mind and probably become a little bit more aggressive on offense.
Now, I think what he tried to do is the same thing they did with Tom Brady way back in the day when he took over for Drew Bledsoe. It's just kind of, don't make him do too much. Maybe you ain't heard this term in a while, game manager. Make him a game manager to where you only ask him to make a couple of throws a game, but try to win with running and defense. And it worked to a point, but like you said, when they face a team that can score at will, it didn't work. And so you hope to see some growth in Mac Jones next year and to open up the playbook because, like you said, if he continues to have the same mindset and McDaniels calls these same types of plays next year, the result is going to be the same. You're going to lose in the first round if you're even lucky enough to make the playoffs.
Yeah, man. Plus, you got to look at your division. You got Josh Allen, who's going to be there because he signed a long-year deal. He signed a long-term contract with Buffalo, so he could be in the division for years to come. Tua. You know, that's still yet to be proven. The young kid in the Jets, still to be proven. So you have a chance to win your division because you only have basically one quarterback in your division that's to scare you, and that's Josh Allen. It ain't like you playing in the AFC West where you going against Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, and Derek Carr.
Yeah. You're not playing against elite quarterbacks or above average quarterbacks every week. Like you said, they're playing against guys who haven't proven themselves, and they may be really good on this drive. The next two or three drives, they turn the ball over, or they overthrow or underthrow somebody, or what have you. And so, they're kind of in the boat that they had everybody else in for all those years, where all teams had to worry about was Tom Brady, but they just couldn't do anything about it in that division. And so now Josh Allen is king of that division, and New England is one of the also-rans trying to figure out how they can catch up.
Ben and we on this subject before we get off. Josh McDaniels' name is being floated around for a coaching job in Las Vegas.
Is the head coach?
Yeah.
No, I would not. For me, as a fan of whatever team it is, I would not want him because he's too flaky. And then look what happened when he was Denver's coach. And granted, that was a long time ago, but his second chance was when he got that Colts job, and then he flaked on them and said, oh, well, I changed my mind, even though, you know, people have quit their jobs to be on my staff and you guys have fired people to replace them with the ones I hired. I quit. So, yeah, I wouldn't want any part of it. What do you think?
I would not want Josh McDaniels as my head coach.
After what he did
to the Colts, I don't even think he should have ever been considered for another head coaching job. Because
I agree.
I hate to make this about race, but if you would have put a black coach would have did that, he would have been blackballed forever, ever being considered for a head coach again. He accepted the job. And then in the 12th hour, no, I'm going to say the 13th hour, he decided to turn the job down. And basically Indianapolis had to regroup. They had to go out and reconduct their search for a head coach. They thought they had a head coach. And plus, I'm thinking of the job that he did in Denver. I just can't get over this. He He traded Brandon Marshall. He traded Jay Cutler. He traded up to draft Tim Tebow. And he got fined by the league for quote-unquote Spygate, where he was spying on the opposition that he probably learned while he was in New England. I just don't like this guy as being my head coach. It's everything about him I just don't trust and I don't like. And I think the Raiders, like me and Tracy said, I like Brian Flores. Tracy, you said you like who for the Raiders?
That interim guy that's already there.
You like Bisaccia?
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, but his name is being floated around for the Raiders job.
You know who Josh McDaniels reminds me of from the collegiate level? Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin burns bridges wherever he goes, and people can't stand him. Because remember, he was the Raiders coach, and then he did some foul stuff there, and that didn't work out. Then he went to Tennessee. He did some foul stuff there. That didn't work out. He went to USC. He did some foul stuff there. And he went some other. He was at Alabama for a while. He just is always doing something that's like, I wouldn't trust that guy to be my coach, but he continues to get all these other opportunities. I just don't get it.
Man, well, we went over, so fuck it. Let's just keep on going.
okay.
You know, man. Black coaches, bro. It's like black coaches, when they get hired, they normally go to a bad situation. It's not like you going to Matt LaFleur and you going to Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. That's normally not your plight. You probably Todd Bowles going to the Jets with a carousel of quarterbacks that you are forced to coach that aren't good. Or you have Vance Joseph going to Denver after the Peyton Manning era. Or you have Steve Wilks going to Arizona, who just drafted that kid out of UCLA, Josh Rosen, who we all knew wasn't good in college, but y'all drafted him. You Robert Saleh, who goes to the Jets, who drafted Zach Wilson, and basically you putting all your eggs into a rookie quarterback. So I say all that to say this. Black coaches are never put in a situation where they're normally going to succeed. But how do you fire David Culley after 1 year with this quarterback situation you have? How you fire Steve Wilks because you went out and drafted Josh Rosen, and then the next year you come back and you cut Rosen or you trade Rosen and draft Kyler Murray? It's like Anthony Lynn last year with the Chargers. Y'all drafted Justin Herbert. Y'all get Anthony Lynn with one. Y'all get him 1 year with Justin Herbert, and then you fire him and you bring in, the Brandon Staley kid. And it's like, come on, man. It's the hiring practices in the NFL are suspect, being at 75-70% of the players are black. Come on, man. Y'all got to have more black coaches, man. You just got to give them a chance.
Stay on that Anthony Lynn for just a second. You make a very valid point because, like you said, they bring in Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert had a great season last year. He was rookie year, if I remember correctly. And then they fire Anthony Lynn. I thought they did a great job with a guy that a lot of people had questions on when he came out. That was one of the reasons why Tua got picked before he did. Nobody really had a problem with that for the most part at that time. And it was shocking to most people that Justin Herbert turned out as well as he did. It's so soon. And so then they bring in Brandon Staley, and to me they act like this guy's doing such a great job. The Chargers were no better this year than they were last year. I think they may have won one more game. But he had Herbert from day one. He knew Herbert was going to be his quarterback. Plus he had a year seasoning. Plus he had a better line because they had Rashawn Slater, who, by everyone's estimation, is like already one of the best linemen in the NFL and is a rookie. And so he had the benefit.
He's second team all pro.
Well, there you go. And so he's had the benefit of a lot of things that Anthony Lynn did not. And they claim he's doing a great job. To me, San Diego is the same team they were last year. It's just that they played one more game this year and they had a chance to play in, and they lost primarily because of Brandon Staley and constantly going up for it on fourth down during the regular season and other games. And so you made a very good point of picking that particular example, because it's just not fair that he lost his job and now this other guy is seen as an up-and-comer. But he just did the same thing that the same guy did last year. And then just like I mentioned earlier when I said somebody is going to have to take a position that they don't want because they don't know if they'll ever get that choice again. That's how come I believe a minority most likely is going to have to take that Houston job. They're going to have to take a job. That's how come Byron Leftwich, which will get the Jacksonville job. Most people don't want that job. Just like I said earlier, Dan Quinn refused to even interview for it. People are removing their names from consideration for the job. They don't want to even try for it. And so as a minority coach, you have to take jobs that are one of those, well, what do we have to lose? We'll take a shot. Everything else isn't work. And so even with a few black coaches, minority coaches that you've seen, they've taken over situations that were just awful. Like Tony Dungy in Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay was awful for years and years and years before he got there. Probably one of the examples that doesn't fall into that category would be somebody like Mike Tomlin. And I remember when he got interviewed for that job, I was like, that's just for the
blue.
There's no way they hire him. And then when they said they actually hired him, and he had only been like a D coordinator for like a year, or he had very limited amount of experience. But obviously they knew what they were doing. They made the right decision. And that's how come their team is successful, because they know how to do things like that. Bad teams are constantly changing coaches. Every year or two, they're changing coaches again, like the Broncos have been doing, like the Giants do. And there's other teams that have done it, but those are just the ones that come to my mind right away. And so, yeah, as a minority, like I said, you have to take the worst job, because those are the ones that you're going to get offered. You're never going to get, like you said, the position where you're kind of set up for success, where there's already a good coach, a good player, a good quarterback in place, and other things that you need to win.
Yeah, man. And then if you go back to this Anthony Lynn for a quick second, think of all the kicks they missed to win games. Just think of all the kicks the Chargers had to win games that they lost on, like, the last possession. I think the Chargers had, like, the most last possession field goal misses and probably the last 2 years of Anthony Lynn's tenure in NFL history. If he would have won some of those games. And then this year, he would have been back with the Chargers with a healthy Derwin James, a healthy Bosa, you know, and another year with Justin Herbert. I mean, I just think that there's a lot of things a coach can't control.
Right.
And that was one of them. I mean, the kicking game for the Chargers was probably one of the worst kicking games in the NFL the last 2 years. I mean, they kind of sort of got it right this year, but they won one. I think if you take away the 17th game, they would have had the same record Anthony Lynn had, and he got fired.
Exactly. Exactly. The Chargers were the Minnesota Vikings of 2020. Just like the Vikings kept losing all these games at the end, that's the same thing the Chargers were doing. And like you said, it was the kicking game, and we do have to put some of that blame on the coach. But if you just think, if we can just change around one or maybe even two of those games, you're in the playoffs. And then they did make the playoffs before last year. The season before, they won a whole bunch of games. And so it's not like you did a bad job. Right. Yeah, they didn't win, but they were there. And so it's not like he did a bad job. It's just that they felt like they wanted to move on. They feel happy with what they have now. We'll see. To me, he really hasn't done anything to show me that he's a good coach. He just maintained the status quo of what they already had with better talent.
And I'm going to put it like this, Trace. I'm going to take it one step further. just on the Chargers and Brandon Staley. If Anthony Lynn would have went for it on those fourth downs like Staley did, and they did convert, I think Anthony Lynn would have got fired during the season. I think he would have got fired during the season. Whereas they let Brandon Staley, you know, that Kansas City game is probably the most glaring because they should have won that game. And his fourth down decision making cost them that game. I think if that was Anthony Lynn, he would have got fired during the season.
Oh, yeah, absolutely would have. Everything is about perspective. Because just think about the justification you just did, where you said if it was this coach, he would have got fired. But with this guy, oh, he's aggressive. He really is going for the win. He's trusting his defense. He's putting his team in position to win. And that's just like with somebody like Brian Flores. Supposedly, Brian Flores was difficult to work with. He wins, but he's difficult to work with. But if you're a person that's difficult to work with and you win, you're just misunderstood. Oh, he's a hard guy to get along with, but he gets results. But if you're a non-white and you have those descriptions, hard to get along with, you get shown the door. Despite having a winning record with no talent. The Dolphins don't have any talent. They traded away all their picks. And then they had to go with Tua. They picked the wrong guy. And then their best wide receiver is always hurt, Devontae Parker.
Yep.
And then your best wide receiver that you bought in, Jalen Waddle, he had a lot of catches, but he only averaged like 9 yards a catch. So everything is, yeah, he did the best that he could with limited talent. And, yeah, those are the type of things you get. And that's the difference between being an old boy coach and being a minority coach.
And I'm going to put – and I'm going to kind of like go back to Flores real quick. Flores wanted Justin Herbert. The organization took Tua. Flores wanted to trade for Deshaun Watson. The organization wanted to stick with Tua. So it's like Flores being the head coach, he telling y'all what he want, but every time he tell y'all what he want, y'all buck at him. And then y'all fire him. It's like – you can't if what the coach wants proves to be better than what you did. Okay, you just gotta swallow your pride and say, "Hey Brian, you right. We should have did this. Hey Brian, you right. We should have did that. Hey, next time it's gonna be your call." You don't let the guy go just because y'all got a disagreement. You find a way to work through it. Basically, what he did. He was proven right. Herbert is better than Tua.
By everybody's standards, even Tua would tell you that. But you know the bad thing about all of this? And I question how it came down, but I still feel like this needs to be said anyway. That's a black coach with a black general manager.
Yeah.
Supposedly the owner made the call, but I'm just saying, that's something that I don't know if we've ever – have we ever had a black coach in there yet? You mentioned it earlier, perhaps being a possibility with the Giants. I don't know if we've ever had that in the NFL before, except in this one case.
I think that's the first time because Rick Smith was the general manager in Houston, and I think that was the whole time during the Bill O'Brien era, and then you had Ozzie. And he had white coaches with him. And then
right.
Tomlin has basically had Kevin Colbert the whole time
right.
He's been in Pittsburgh. Vance Joseph had John Elway. Anthony Lynn had one of the Chargers GM. So, yeah, it ain't like, nah, that's the first time.
Yep, that's the first time we ever had it, and supposedly he's hard to get along with, and the owner gives the edict to fire him. I just don't like how that went down. And I remember we kind of had mentioned maybe we would talk about the lack of black head coaches. And the problem that we run into with that is when you have black GMs, it's either they don't hire black coaches or they don't have the opportunity to hire their coach. And Atlanta is a perfect example. Atlanta hired their coach first, and then they hired their GM, who happens to be a black guy, Terry Fontenot. And so he didn't even have a chance to choose who was going to be his coach. And that's normally not how it works, because normally those guys tie into each other, and that's why a lot of times when one gets fired, the other one's gone too.
Yeah.
And so when he doesn't even get a chance to hire his own guy, but then when you do get a chance and you hire whoever, it's politically correct to say hire the best guy for the job. Okay, we know what that means. It doesn't always happen that way. So when you have an opportunity to kind of bring in a guy that you believe in, is it because these guys simply don't want to hire them, or is it because they're being forced to hire somebody else to where they may want to bring in this minority coach? And then the owner says, well, the advice I'm getting is not to hire that guy. I think we should hire, you know, some other guy. Like maybe we should retread somebody like Dan Quinn. Or maybe we should retread somebody like, you know, these coaches who get hired over and over again.
Yeah.
As opposed to somebody like Jim Caldwell, who I think is actually a pretty good coach. He did an excellent job in Detroit. And they have been awful, just awful, since he left there. And hired the so-called genius Matt Patricia. How'd that work out?
All right, Trace, let's talk about the elephant in the room before we get off.
What it
Eric is? Eric Bieniemy is the elephant in the room. Eric Bieniemy is looked at. His position with the Kansas City Chiefs is listed as offensive coordinator. People look at the Kansas City Chiefs as being Andy Reid's team, and Andy Reid calls the plays. Doug Peterson got a job because he was, quote-unquote, the Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator. Never called a play. Matt Nagy was looked at as an offensive coordinator under Andy Reid, never called a play. Eric Bieniemy actually calls plays. He and Andy Reid actually sit down and come up with the offensive game plan for the week. But Eric Bieniemy is frowned upon as far as being a head coach candidate. Fair or unfair? Now, I know we have to think about some of the things that Eric Bieniemy has been accused of in the past, and, you know, all that good stuff. But at the time, you know, he was a kid. You know, he was still in college. Some of the stuff has yet to be proven against Eric Bieniemy. Why isn't Eric Bieniemy a coach in the NFL, Tracy?
That is an outstanding question. You know who he reminds me of? And then I'll tell you why I think he hasn't gotten a job yet. Do you remember Sherm Lewis that was like the offense coordinator for the Packers back in the day when why can't I remember that dude that used to be there? You know the guy that used to be Green Bay's head coach with the mustache. They won the Super Bowl with him. Why can't I call this thing? Holmgren, there you go, Mike Holmgren. He was his old coordinator, and that was the question people were asking back then. Why doesn't Sherm Lewis get any opportunities? He's doing a great job as old coordinator for Packers. And I think the reason why these guys don't get a real shot is because the perception is they're not really impactful. It's almost like they're just there. They're almost like an apprentice or an assistant. They're not really running the offense. They just might give a little input here or there. It kind of reminds me of with NWA, the rap group. Every album you would see, the ones that they put out would say, produced by Dr. Dre, executive producer DJ Yella. And so you think Yella is this great producer, but once you actually talk to him, it's like, oh, you know, all Yella really did for Dr. Dre is just go get the records. He needs a sample. Hey, go get this, go get that. He really didn't do anything. And so that's how these people are treating Eric Bieniemy now, Sherm Lewis in the past, is that they're just kind of apprentices. They're not really having any input. And then they're falling prey to that stereotype that black people can't be intellectual. You can't really think the game in those terms. You can work on the defensive side maybe. But when it comes to analyzing and drawing plays and dusting, yeah, these guys look like they fit the bill more so what we're looking for. So we believe them, and you're going to have to prove it to us, but we're not going to give you the opportunity to prove it. And then, like you said, the off-the-field stuff with him is kind of in the mix too. But I think primarily they just look at it's not really his offense. It's really Andy Reid's. And Eric Bieniemy is just kind of along for the ride because he's had some interviews. And just based on what I've seen, it seems like he should be a head coach. It seems like he can command guys' attention. It seems like he could be a leader of men. But he doesn't need to convince me. And so far, he hasn't convinced the right people.
Man, it's, to me, it's like, talk to Patrick Mahomes. If you got any questions about Eric Bieniemy, talk to Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes talks about Eric Bieniemy glowingly. He says Eric Bieniemy is probably the biggest key to his success since he's been in the NFL. He said even when he was the backup, Eric Bieniemy would come to him and say, I need you to learn the plays as if you was a starter because you never know where you're going in. Patrick Mahomes said that motivated him to be a better quarterback. That's why he was ready to be the starter when they traded Alex Smith away. Eric Bieniemy is like, okay, we don't really have a lot of black offensive coordinators in the game. And it's like people are like, man, are unicorns really real? Eric Bieniemy isn't a unicorn. He's a student of the game. He was a running back.
Right.
He was an offensive player. So he do know offensive schemes. He do know offensive plays, so that makes him more than capable of being able to draw up offensive plays to beat certain defenses because he actually played the game. Andy Reid has spoken glowingly of Eric Bieniemy. He has even come out and said Eric Bieniemy is the true offensive coordinator. I just think teams don't want to give him a shot because I don't think they believe that a black person could be an offensive coordinator.
I agree with you. And the only reason left which is getting that position is because it's the Jags and because he used to be a player for them. So it's kind of a neat marriage for them. But go ahead and finish what you were saying.
And plus, Tom Brady has co-signed Leftwich. Tom Brady, the GOAT, has co-signed Leftwich. Tom Brady just came out and said Leftwich is probably, you know, although he's the second or third offensive coordinator he worked with, he's came out and said, Brown has taught me things about the game that I didn't know. And Tom is getting him a lot of credit. So guess what? That carries a lot of weight with these quote-unquote decision makers. Oh, Tom Brady is co-signing him. Oh, man, we really got to pay close attention to that, you know. Byron Leftwich was
a
quarterback in the NFL. Byron Leftwich was a quarterback in the NFL. So Byron Leftwich has played this game at the highest level, executing plays at the highest level. So his knowledge of the game shouldn't be questioned. Now, if you're talking about bringing in what's the kid name that was in the same draft as Peyton Manning that was a bust?
Ryan Leaf?
Yeah. Now, if you're talking about Ryan Leaf bringing him in as their offensive coordinator, I'm really questioning your decision making. I'm just saying.
No, I agree with you.
But, hey, man, we don't make the decisions, Tracy. We just here to discuss them. And this was a topic that I really wanted to talk about, although we went over on time today. But it was something we had to talk about. I'm a black man. Tracy is a black man. And we love this NFL. We love football. We love talking about football. And sometimes you talk about football, you got to talk about the ugly truth about football. And there is an underlying systemic racism within coaching, GM, and ownership within the National Football League. And that's not my opinion. That's not Trace's opinion. If you look at the numbers, it's proven.
It's a stated fact. It continues to happen. I think currently there's only one black coach in the NFL right now. And you can't tell me there's not more people that are qualified. Right. And you can't tell me there aren't other guys that are more qualified or guys that should even get another opportunity. Like I mentioned Caldwell earlier. Jim Caldwell is a good – he's a quality coach. And a team like Miami, because if I remember right, I think he used to be down there before he got sick
he
or
was
something
associate,
when Flores first
– He was
go ahead and say
yeah, he was associate head. He was associate head coach for Brian Flores when Flores took the job. Flores made him the associate head coach because he wanted teams to give Jim Caldwell another look as a possible head coaching candidate.
Right, and if I remember right, I think Jim Caldwell got sick or he had some type of issue to where he had to quit. And so you could do a lot where I would rather have him than – to me, some unknown quality like Kellen Moore. He could very well prove to be a great coach. I'm talking about Kellen Moore. But I just don't see it. And I think he's only been an old coordinator for, what, a year or two? He's probably actually still young enough to play if he was good enough to be a quarterback in the NFL. Because remember, he was in the league for a while as a backup. And then next thing you know, he was on the sideline as a coach. So I just think that he needs more seasoning. Somebody like Jim Caldwell has taken a team to the Super Bowl. He took a awful team like the Lions and had them in playoff contention several years. So, yeah, he deserves another opportunity. And he's just one example. I'm sure there's guys out there that we don't even know what their names are, but they've been grinding for this opportunity, and they just get passed over time and time again for hot coordinators or just whatever the hot name is at that point in time.
Yeah, if I'm I'm going to put it like this, Tracy. Black coaches are normally defensive coordinators, linebacker coaches, on that side of the ball, on the defensive side. Coaches, if you're a young coach, try to get on the offensive side of the ball as soon as possible. Getting on the offensive side of the ball gets you to being a head coach faster. That shouldn't be true. But if you look at the state of the game, it is true. Offensive coaches have been elevated, being elevated faster these days. Kellen Moore, Sean McVay, Matt LaFleur, Zach Taylor, the coach in Atlanta, him. Brandon Staley,
Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, Kyle Shanahan. You have to be on the offensive side of the ball to even be considered for a head coaching job. We're not saying that it's fair, but if you look at the way the game is going, it's true.
That's very true.
So, hey, me and Tracy, man, great show tonight. I'm going to try to get Tracy back next week to break down the conference championship games. We definitely went over tonight, but it was a spirited conversation that I wanted to have with Tracy. And it was a great conversation, bro. I mean, we highlighted some things, probably some things people didn't want to hear, but at the same time, we fans of football, and you got to take the good with the bad, and sometimes you got to highlight the bad.
You do. Just real quick before we go. I just saw run across the screen. Ben McAdoo is about to be hired as the Panthers' offensive coordinator. So there's a retread name. He flamed out as a Giants coach. He comes out of nowhere, and all of a sudden he's the offensive coordinator that's supposed to be able to work magic. So now what happens if whoever the Panthers' quarterback is next year has a great year? Guess who's in line to be a head coach again? That would be Ben McAdoo.
Hold up, time out.
What? You know who I'm talking about?
Hey, he the one that sat Eli down?
That would be the same guy.
Oh, man.
Yeah, okay. He's back in.
So they fired Joe Brady, who was the offensive coordinator at LSU, who won a national championship, and replaced him with McAdoo.
Ben McAdoo is back in the house, man. We ain't talking about Bob McAdoo. Ben McAdoo. He's 1 year away from being a hot head coaching candidate again.
Tracy, If somebody hire Adam Gase to be their offensive coordinator, I'm going to lose it. I'm going to lose it, bro.
It's happening.
I'm going to lose it. I'm telling you now in advance. If he get hired to be an offensive coordinator, I'm going to lose it.
I'm telling you it's going to happen. Even if he has to go someplace like Alabama or whatever, he is going to get another job because he's going to do a good job somewhere, and they're going to be like, oh, he's learned from his mistakes. Look at what happened to Belichick in his first head coaching job. So sometimes it takes a little time, and I think this guy's ready. It's going to happen. I'm just telling you. It shouldn't, but it's going to.
Oh, man. That's just bad news all over. All right, man. Hey, well, we're going to close out on a positive note. We're not going to close out on McAdoo. We're going to close out on everybody. Make sure you watch the games this weekend. You got the best teams basically in the league playing this weekend because although San Francisco record doesn't say they're a good team, San Francisco is a good team. So watch the games. For those people that's back east, I know y'all getting snow. I hope y'all ready for it. Make sure you scrape the snow off your satellite dish, and you got the cable ready to go for these games tomorrow. Look, Tracy, man, I really appreciate the conversation tonight. Hopefully I can get you back on next Friday.
Anytime, man.
All right. So, yeah, Tracy going to be by next Friday, and we're going to break down the conference championship games. And whatever news comes out during the week, we'll talk about that too. But everybody have a great weekend.
Yeah, anybody has any coaches?
Yeah. Any last words for the people, Trace?
No, that's it. Enjoy these games. Only got, like, what, 7 more football games left that count in this season, so enjoy them while they're here.
Yeah, man. Like I said, Tracy, Sunday, we're going to get together at the house to watch the games, drink, eat. You know, we just going to kick back for my birthday. Hey, appreciate all y'all listening. Trace, I emailed. Did you get the link to the show last week?
I did see it. So, yeah, send me this one, too. I appreciate
okay, I'll see
that.
You listening. Yeah. So, everybody have a great weekend. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. COVID is real. Wear your mask. Practice social distancing. Wash your hands and all that good stuff. The shot. Voluntarily, if you believe in it, get it. If you don't. Hey, but we'll be back next Friday for the Friday Night Fire flavor with me and Tracy. So everybody take care. Have a great weekend. And as always, we end the show with a peace.